Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Tantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur Samadita Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Agarishtriya Samadivarti. Agarishtriya Samadivarti. Agarishtriya Samadivarti. Agarishtri Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, Manifestation of Brahma from Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. This is text number 27. The word means mukhena, by the gesture of the face. Loka arti hara, vanquisher of the distress of the devotee. Smitena, by smiling. Parispurat, dazzling. Kundala, earrings. Manditena, decorated with. Shona yitena, acknowledging. Adhara, of his lips. Bimba, reflection. Pasa, rays. Patyarhayantam, reciprocating. Sunasena, by his pleasing nose. Subhra, and pleasing eyebrows. Subhra, how do you say that? B-R-V-A, bra. Not quite sure exactly how that's pronounced. Hard to say those, all those consonants together. Mukhena lokarti harasmitena. Parispurat kundala manditena. Shunaitena dra bimbabhasa. Pratyarhayantam sunasena subhra. Mukhena lokarti harasmitena. Parispurat kundala manditena. Shonaitena dhara bimbabhasa. Pratyahayantam sunasena subhra.
Translation. He also acknowledged the service of the devotees and vanquished their distress by his beautiful smile. He is Lord, the Lord, Garbhalakshaya Vishnu. The reflection of his face, decorated with earrings, was so pleasing because it dazzled with the rays from his lips and the beauty of his nose and eyebrows. We usually don't hear about rays coming from the Lord's lips, but that's the way it's described here. Even his lips are refulgent. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devotional service to the Lord is very much obliging to him. There are many transcendentalists in different fields of spiritual activities, but devotional service to the Lord is unique. Devotees do not ask anything from the Lord in exchange for their service. Even the most desirable liberation is refused by devotees, although offered by the Lord. Thus the Lord becomes a kind of debtor to the devotees, and he can only try to repay the devotee's service with his ever-enchanting smile. The devotees are ever satisfied by the smiling face of the Lord, and they become enlivened. And by seeing the devotee so enlivened, the Lord himself is further satisfied. So there is continuous transcendental competition between the Lord and his devotees by such reciprocation of service and acknowledgement. Omagyana Timidantasya Dhyana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshira Militam Yena Krishna Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Lord Brahma is having darshan. Of course, Brahma, he performed so many austerities, thousands of years. Tapasya, as described, that tapasya can have different meanings. Usually we may think of it as, you know, undergoing some kind of physical hardship. But the acharyas have explained that the essential meaning, or at least one of the meanings, main meanings of tapasya, is fixed concentration of the mind. So the idea of that, you can think, well, that's probably about the hardest thing to do. It may be easier to torture your body in different ways, but to fix your mind, to really focus the mind, is very difficult. So that was the tapasya that Lord Brahma did when he heard the syllables tapa. He had a sense, he knew somehow that God was talking to him. A lot of crazy people think the same thing, but Lord Brahma, he knew, I'm getting an order from a higher authority to perform tapasya. It's interesting, I came across this just fairly recently, that in the Sanskrit grammar, the word tapa doesn't just mean austerity, it means do austerity. Grammatically, it actually means it's an imperative. It's an order to perform austerity, just these two syllables. So of course he did that. Then he got the darshan of the Lord. He had this beautiful painting. I don't know if it's in this volume. But with Lord Brahma sitting up there, and he's looking down, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is there. And now we're hearing how he's seeing the Lord. Yesterday, there's this beautiful idea that the Lord raised his feet. It's kind of interesting that, of course, you're seeing the Lord's whole body, seeing his face and his arms, and every part of him is beautiful. But there's something special about his feet. So, to be really nice to his devotees, he said, here, take a look. Lifted up his feet so the devotees could see the bottom of his feet. You don't usually see the bottom of someone's feet, right? So he showed his lotus feet. So here we're hearing about his smile. He also acknowledges the service of the devotees and vanquished their distress by his beautiful smile. There are many places in the Bhagavatam where we hear about the Lord's smile. What could be more wonderful to have Krishna smiling? And it says he's always smiling. Of course, he may not be smiling when he's killing demons, but when he's with his devotees, he always has this beautiful smile, this enchanting smile. It's one of the uddipanas, you know, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. Stimuluses for devotion to the Lord, or especially for bhavas, for experiencing intense emotion and attachment to the Lord. There are different things connected with the Lord and inspire the devotees. So one of those is his smile. When the devotees, you know, that's all they need. This is what's being described here. They want to serve the Lord without any reward, really. They're not asking for even liberation. What to speak of any material things. We have so many examples in the Bhagavatam of devotees. The Lord is offering them a benediction and they don't want it. And in fact, The acharyas point out that Krishna is a little. Here it probably says the devotional service to the Lord is very much obliging to him. So Krishna feels obliged by the service. I was just here. I've been watching a lot of the videos of the remembrances. You may have seen these. The devotees are recalling things, and then you had all the videos that were Yadubar Prabhu and I guess Vishak, another helper. They were able to collect from all over the world any videos that were taken. And then sometimes the devotees are watching the video and speaking, talking about, because they were there and they're experiencing what happened. So one of the themes that comes up a lot, and they're really wonderful. I've been watching them one after the other. And one of the themes that comes up is how appreciative Srila Prabhupada was of the service of his devotees, and how much Prabhupada loved his devotees and went out of his way to make them happy. Also by his smile, of course. And Prabhupada would smile, that was it. And kirtan, so many, I'm watching these old kirtans from the early 70s, and like devotees bouncing off the ceiling. They're so young. And they're just pounding on the drum. They're all jumping up and down. And then Prabhupada, of course, he just lifts his finger an inch, and then everything just goes wild. And Prabhupada smiles. That's all the devotees need. In so many places, of course, when Prabhupada is arriving at the airports, the devotees are longing to see him. And one thing that's interesting is that sometimes Prabhupada went to places where the devotees, they never thought that Prabhupada would ever come here. This is a small temple, and then he would come. He would agree. They would invite him, and then he would actually come. And of course, the devotees would be so ecstatic to see him. But that was all the devotees. Of course, they worked so hard too. They worked so hard to prepare for him to come and serving him. Hearing about the devotees, so many austerities in the early days. I was hearing last night or the night before about the devotees in Germany, how they were sneaking into East Germany to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, and, you know, taking great risks. So Prabhupada was so appreciative of that. So you can say he felt indebted. He wanted to serve. That was his service. There's one place where Prabhupada explains how giving mercy is done in different ways. Or service is done in different ways. So for a superior, you may do some kind of, you know, menial service in that way. We tend to think of service. But Prabhupada said the service of the superior is daya, to give mercy. That's his service to his dependents, you can say his subordinates. So Prabhupada gave his mercy by traveling all over the world. It's one of the amazing things, of so many amazing things about Srila Prabhupada, how he traveled so much. It's so hard to travel. I hate traveling. I don't travel anymore. It's so difficult to travel. And especially at old age, and when the old body that Prabhupada was in, of course he wasn't old in spirit. And of course Prabhupada, no one could keep up with him. When the devotees who were traveling with him, it was extremely difficult for them. They would arrive at some place and devotees just wanted to crash for 2 days. to recover from their jet lag. And Prabhupada never had jet lag, or at least he never showed it. That was the other thing. Prabhupada, he had a body, and of course the body has certain needs, but he often just neglected it. He went right into his schedule, whatever his normal schedule was, like translating in the middle of the night and so on. So why did he do that? Because that was his, at least part of his inspiration, was to reciprocate with devotees. He felt obliged for the service they were doing to help him spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, what they were doing with so much enthusiasm. So Krishna also, as explained here, he feels a kind of obligation. He wants to, when the devotees serve him, they give their lives to him, complete full surrender to him. So Krishna wants to reward them in some way. So he sometimes gives material things sometimes. But just like in the story of Sudama, that's one example. You know, the story that Sudama went to Dwarka and he spent time with Krishna, which is, of course, is wonderful. That whole episode is so nice. Krishna's meeting his old school friend and worshiping him. He's a Brahmin. Krishna's a Kshatriya, so he's worshiping him and treating him so wonderfully. But then Sudama, of course, he went there. His wife asked him to go there because they were so poor. She was thinking, well, Krishna is so opulent, he'll give something to help us. We're practically dying here. But Sudama, he just loves being with Krishna. He leaves and he just that was all he needed. He didn't get anything from Krishna, apparently. But of course, we know when he got home, he was living, he experienced this great opulence. So it's described, the Acharyas described, that Krishna didn't give anything in Dwarka because he was embarrassed that he didn't have anything to give. So my devotee has given everything to me, but what do I have? I can't give, he doesn't really, there's no way that I can reciprocate adequately the love and service of my devotees. They're full surrender to me. One way Krishna thinks that I have to reciprocate with so many. They're focused on me. Everything is for me. But I have so many others. There's so many that I have to reciprocate with. So I'm kind of spread out. But the devotee is fully in full concentration on me. So that's what it said, why Krishna didn't give anything to Sudama and Dwarka, because he was embarrassed. He couldn't really. So he said, I'll just give him some opulence, you know, whether he likes it or not. When I hear that, I think, I don't know if I would want that, what he got. You think he's this humble Brahmin, he's used to living a certain way, and next thing he's got, you know, his pal, he's got all these people around, he's like, no solitude anymore. He may not like that change of lifestyle that was Krishna somehow forced on him. So, but still, Krishna's thinking, what can I do? This is all I have, you know, this is all I can give him. Of course, he can give his smile, right? And he can bless the devotees in different ways. Just like, of course, with Prahlad Maharaj, that's another nice example. Nrisimhadev wanted to give him something. And Prahlad said, don't talk like that. I'm not just a, you know, this isn't a mercantile exchange. I'm eternally your servant. You're eternally my master. That's all there is to it. You don't have to give me anything. Of course, Nrisimhadev, he put his hand on his head. That was very nice. His lotus hand. Nice. Prabhupada talks about that, the prayer, our prayer. Tavakara kamala vare nakam adbhuta shingham. Adbhuta. Actually, so many things about Krishna are adbhuta. Adbhuta means wonderful. So it says his nails are wonderfully sharp. So Prabhupada also, he commented on this one time. He said this whole idea of the Lord's hand being wonderful, because it's kamala. His hand is kamala. It's a lotus. He's got his lotus hand, but then it has these sharp nails on the end of it. So with that hand, of course, Hiranyakashipu got the fingernails, and Prahlad Maharaj got the palm. He got the palm, the soft lotus-like palm on his head, and Hiranyakashipu got the fingernail part of it, which are like a thunderbolt, vajranaka. His nails are described to be like a thunderbolt. So Prahlad, of course, another is described, not in the Bhagavatam, but in other places, that Nrisimhadev, of course, he's a lion, at least half lion. So he took Prahlad on his lap and he was licking him, like a mother lioness does for her cub. So, of course, an ordinary non-devotee might think, whoa, this is really weird. We think, of course, everything about the Lord is wonderful. His saliva is wonderful. It's like Lord Chaitanya says, this prasadam is mixed with Krishna's saliva. And, you know, an outsider might think, oh my gosh, what? But we think God's saliva, wow, that's really amazing. Every part of him is wonderful. There's nothing dirty about him or undesirable. So devotees become enlivened by all of these things. So as Prabhupada points out here, there's this competition that goes on between the devotee and the Lord. This comes up in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a couple of places. Lord Chaitanya, especially in the fourth chapter, the Adi Lila. Actually, in the Krishna book, we have the prime example, you can say, this verse, Naparayeham, Niravajya Samyujam. You may be familiar with this. Shivaram Swami wrote a book called Naparayeham. I cannot repay my debt to you. That's what he told the gopis. I can never repay my debt to you. Actually, let me read the translation to this verse. I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service. even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. So this is quite a famous verse, often quoted by the Acharyas. This wonderful idea that Krishna's, there's always competition going on, and Krishna feels defeated. The gopis, they've given up everything. And the Acharyas, they comment on this verse. Krishna says, I haven't given up my family, but you've given up everything. Your children, your husband, everything, all your relatives. You didn't care. You were ready to give up. In fact, they did. When they walked away to go to Krishna, they didn't know what the consequences were going to be to that. Such an amazing thing. Just gave up everything for him. So Krishna says, was thinking, I can't do that. I can't reciprocate in an equal way. Now some of our acharyas and our parampara, even recent ones, they've analyzed Krishna's indebtedness, and sometimes their inspiration, you can say, their ideas that therefore Krishna comes, that's one reason Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya. He comes for many different reasons. So one reason he comes is he's trying to repay the debt of the gopis. And one way to do that is to make more devotees of Krishna. That will please the gopis if you make more devotees of Krishna, because that's what they want. They want everyone to be Krishna's devotee, to love and serve Krishna. So Krishna thought, well, I'll go as Lord Chaitanya, I'll become a devotee and I'll make more devotees, bring more devotees to Krishna. Actually, there's another idea on this theme of why Krishna comes. I heard this is nice. I don't think this is written in Shastra anywhere, but it's just devotee's own inspiration. He was speaking about Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is Radharani. So this devotee was saying, actually, everything Krishna does ultimately is for Srimati Radharani. So the reason Lord Chaitanya came is because Radharani, she always wants to be with Krishna all the time, but she can't. But as Gadadhar, she's ordered to be with Krishna all the time. Mother Sachi says, you be with this boy, my son, he's having these ecstasies. I don't know what's wrong with him. And Gadadhar Pandit knew how to pacify him. So Mother Sachi said, don't leave his side for a moment. So Srimati Radharani gets her wish to be with Krishna all the time in the form of Gadadhar Pandit. So anyway, so this idea of this competition, this comes up in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Actually, it's in the context of the discussion of this verse. Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidirisho Vanaya Vaswa Joyana Bhuta Madhurima Kidirisho Vamadiya Saukyam Chasyamaranu Bhavata Kidirisham Veti Lobhat Tad Bhava Jasamajani Sachigat Bal Sindhu Hirindu. So this verse written by Sut Damodar, the early verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the first, the six verses especially, that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami includes at the beginning, his preface to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can say. So these are written by different. Some are written by Rupa Goswami, some are written by Srup Damodar, and he's quoting them. So this one is written by Srup Damodar. So Srup Damodar has, or at least he revealed the most intimate aspects of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his internal feelings and meditation, you can say. So this is a verse that describes the reasons, three internal reasons for Sri Chaitanya, for Krishna to come as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there are a few phrases to remember that encapsulate these. The first one is Pranaya Mahima. Pranaya means the love. Pranaya, the greatness of the love. Kidrusha, what kind? So what is the greatness of Srimati Radharani's love for me? I want to appreciate that somehow. I want to experience that. How great is her love for me? Pranaya Mahima. The other was Aswaja Yena Yana Adbhuta Madhurima. So here there's word Adbhuta again. Adbhuta Madhurima. Madhu. What is Madhu? Sweet. Sweetness. Adbhuta Madhurima. I want an aswaja. Aswaja means to relish, to taste. He wanted to taste the sweetness. Krishna wanted to taste the sweetness in himself that Srimati Radharani tastes. And then, saukyam chasya mananubhavata. And saukya means that coming from sukha. I want to experience, I want to see what her happiness is like. Madanubhavata, from realizing my sweetness. So first I want to experience, see what that sweetness is like, and in a kind of analytical way you might say, then I want to experience it myself. I want to experience my own. I want to aswadya, I want to taste it. So in the context of this, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami talks about this competition that goes on between Krishna's sweetness and the devotees tasting that sweetness. Huh? So this is here's a couple of verses in that section. The beauty of Krishna increases at the sight of the beauty of the gopis. So this is part of this competition. It goes on in different ways: sweetness, beauty, other things. And the more the gopis see Krishna's beauty, the more their beauty increases. So they actually become beautiful. Just like Prabhupada said that devotees before, when they were hippies, they were all dull-faced, and then they became effulgent, they became beautiful. Of course, their faces are the same stuff, same skin and features and so on. But they became beautiful because they became effulgent, because they were blissful in Krishna consciousness. So the gopis, when they experience Krishna's beauty, and that makes them more beautiful, because they're relishing it so much. And then it says, and the more the gopis see Lord Krishna's beauty, the more their beauty increases. And this way a competition takes place. There's a Bengali word there, hurahuri. Hurahuri, I mean, Prabhupada translates it as juggling. But it comes up a few times in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He also translates it as competition, hurahuri. So there's competition that goes on. He quotes it several times in different lectures. Dona kari hura huri, I think is the way it goes. This phrase probably quotes. It's in a couple of verses in this section. Okay, so let me continue. So in this way, a competition takes place between them in which no one acknowledges defeat. Krishna, however, derives pleasure from the beauty and good qualities of the gopis, and when the gopis see his pleasure, the joy of the gopis increases. So we get the pleasure and the beauty. Both they're competing with each other. And then there's this verse. This is a translation also. Therefore, we find the joy of the gopis nourishes the joy of Lord Krishna. For that reason, the fault of lust is not present in their love. It's interesting because from our perspective, we may have this idea that we understand what's going on between Krishna and the gopis. Well, we don't, really. Because we're in material consciousness, we're as conditioned souls, there's no way we can actually penetrate into that mystery. We can read about it and, you know, get some kind of, you might say, technical understanding of what's going on. But even when we see it, seems like the gopis want something out of this. They want to go to Krishna. So usually if you have this desire, then you have some desire of yourself, that your own, that you're trying to fulfill. So that's what it looks like to us. Why are the gopis going to Krishna? Unless they're getting something out of it themselves, right? But that's not actually what's going on. They don't have a speck of kama. It's kama in the sense, not only lust, but personal desire. They don't have one speck of it. Everything about their being is for the satisfaction of Krishna. That's all they want. So when we look at it, when we read about these things, we always think, well, no, the gopis, they're getting something. They want something, and they're getting satisfaction from it. But at least in their consciousness, of course, we could say also, well, how can we really understand their consciousness, right? It says even the pure devotee who's still, you know, in this world, Jivan Mukta, we can't understand what they do. So what to speak of the gopis, I mean, they're in another world, literally another world, way far beyond us. So anyway, so So this is the, let me read the verse again. Therefore we find that the joy of the gopis nourishes the joy of Krishna. And that's really the reason for their joy. There's this wonderful, you know, in the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is giving commentary, you can say, on the Shikshastakam. So where he's speaking as Srimati Radharani, where she says, if my misery makes Krishna happy, then my misery is my greatest happiness. So this is a nice, this is a good idea, you know, how it's a paradox. What does that mean? My misery is my greatest happiness? What? How can that be, right? They can't both be there. So, but that's the way, that's at least in her consciousness is like that. Whatever it takes. And there's the book by Rupa Goswami, the Hansa Dutta, after Krishna leaves and goes to Mathura, Radharani, she actually wants to commit suicide. Everybody in Vrindavan, they just want to die. They can't live without Krishna. But she doesn't do it because she thinks, well, that will hurt Krishna. Oh, how? Krishna, I don't want to make Krishna sad. I can't stand living like this without him. This is torture. But I'll accept this because if I die, then Krishna will be sad. So anyway, this is Prabhupada's purport to this verse. He says, looking at the beautiful gopis, Krishna becomes enlivened. And this enlivens the gopis whose youthful faces and bodies blossom. Of course, that's also why the gopis, they decorate themselves so beautifully. It's not to attract somebody else or their husbands. It's for Krishna's pleasure. This competition of increasing beauty between the gopis and Krishna, which is without limitations, is so delicate that sometimes mundane moralists mistake these dealings to be purely amorous. But these affairs are not at all mundane, because the gopis' intense desire to satisfy Krishna surcharges the entire scene with pure love of Godhead, with not a spot of sexual indulgence. So this has nothing to do with sex. It has all to do with full surrender to pleasing Krishna. So again, this is, you know, the idea that Prabhupada is giving here. This Krishna feels that he can never repay the gopis. He always feels indebted. And of course, the devotees will never give up trying to satisfy Krishna. So I'm just going to end with something that's not exactly related, but I just wanted to say it because I enjoy watching these DVDs. In one sense, you could say, the Prabhupada's smile made us smile too. As I was explaining, the devotees became effulgent with their smile. So this particular anecdote, pastime of Prabhupada's, made me smile. So maybe I'll tell this. By Hari Kesh, when he was serving Srila Prabhupada, he had to cook for him every day. And he was always frustrated because he wanted to make perfect chapatis for Prabhupada. He wanted them to puff up. But he was so frustrated because a lot of times he didn't have good cooking facilities. He would go here and there, and he didn't know what the stove was going to be like, and this or that. He was always struggling to get them to puff up. So one place he really had this problem, and he was so frustrated, and he brought this unpuffed up chapatis into Srila Prabhupada, and he was complaining to Prabhupada, no one can make a chapati puff up on this stove. And Prabhupada said, no one? And Hari Kesh said, yes, no one. So Prabhupada said, get out of my way. It's so funny because Prabhupada was acting so human, you might say, in his pastime. He said, get out of my way. He stood up and he walked past him and he walked into the kitchen, started playing with the dough and working with it. And he put it on, you know, he heated it, and then he put it on the flame and just sort of half puffed up. And Hari Kesh is thinking, see? I told you, Prabhupada. So he's thinking he's going to be vindicated. So Prabhupada works on it some more. Throws it on the flame, it puffs up. Prabhupada grabs it with the tongs and throws it in his face and hits him in the nose with it. And he just gets up and walks out the door and goes back into his room. So I think that should make you smile, right? See Prabhupada acting like that. So of course Prabhupada did so many wonderful things in his exchange with the devotees. And Krishna, that's what he does. Actually, it's described in other places that the real reason that Krishna creates this material world, it is for the conditioned soul, you know, he has different reasons, but his main reason is because the devotees, his pure devotees, want the deliverance of the souls. he's reciprocating with them, his pure devotees, those who are completely sold out to him. So he's always, you know, as Lord Vishnu told Durvasa Muni, I have no independence. I do what, you know, I'm completely subordinate to my devotees. And that's why you have to go back to Ambarish Maharaj if you want to get forgiven. If you want to get Sudarshan Chakra off your back, then you have to get the blessings of Ambarish Maharaj. So this is such a wonderful thing that God is, you know, Bhakta Vasyata. He feels himself always the servant of his devotees. Sometimes I think this idea that God is the greatest of everything. So he's always the greatest, he's also the greatest servant. Of course, Chief Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrated that. But he's the greatest servant. But then again, Srimati Radharani and his devotees are great. They're both great. It's complicated. You could say greatest. Sometimes Prabhupada used superlatives in so many ways. So they're both the greatest. And that's why this competition goes on. They're both serving each other, trying to see who will serve better. Not what I can get from it, but what I can do to please this person. So it's like, really, this is really the core of Krishna consciousness. What is it about? Sometimes probably we characterize it like that. Being a devotee means thinking always, how can I please Krishna? That's all I want to do. How can I please Krishna? What would be pleasing to Krishna or my spiritual master? Of course, we please Krishna by pleasing the spiritual master. That's the meditation of the serious devotee trying to advance in Krishna consciousness. All right, the translation again. He, Lord Vishnu, also acknowledged the service of the devotees and vanquished their distress by his beautiful smile. The reflection of his face, decorated with earrings, was so pleasing because it dazzled with the rays from his lips and the beauty of his nose and eyebrows. Actually, there's a whole other... I could talk some more, but I'll stop. But this is just what the devotees are seeing. But we hear from Shastra how every sense of the devotee can experience something of Krishna. Krishna's smell, hearing Krishna's voice, and all the senses. And what happens at a very high stage of Krishna consciousness is that the devotee can't handle it. Because just one of these senses absorbed in Krishna is overpowering. So when all the senses are competing, this idea of this sense, no, I want to smell Krishna, I want to see Krishna. The senses are... So Krishna, every aspect of him is all attractive and overpowering to the devotee. And that's why one reason the devotee's body goes into ecstasy, can't handle all the intense emotion of interacting with Krishna through all these different senses. All right, I'll stop here. Yes, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Sorry. A few things. I'll try to be going at high speed here, so it doesn't take too much. You mentioned that there's no sex. There's no question of sex. So sex is like a buzzword. But there is, Prabhupada would use that word specifically at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. He said that there, by saying there's no sex in the spiritual world, the Mayavadis are indirectly encouraging illicit activities. It's that you go to the spiritual world, you're deprived. Of course, Prabhupada is referring to spiritual conjugal rasa, but sometimes Prabhupada would use that buzzword and say. One thing is that we're supposed to wait until we get to the 10th canto before we see the smiling face of the Lord. Now one could argue, well, this is Garbhodaksha Vishnu, it's not Krishna himself, but they're non-different. So it seems like we get like a sneak preview here where we're seeing the smiling face of the Lord and we're only in the third canto, so I wanted to make that comment. What are the brilliant things do I have to say? if there's time, if I could do this in 1 minute, I can I can share a memory where I made Srila Prabhupada, by his mercy, but I made him smile ear to ear.
Are you asking something?
Do I have the blessings of the Vaishnava? Yes. Yeah, it's a... Yeah, well, I have to get your blessings. So, to make a short story shorter, I had to be put away somewhere, and I went crazy on LSD, and when I came out, I immediately made a beeline to the temple. I would always go to 26 Second Avenue. It was like my default mode to see the Swami. And when I walked up, there's some interesting details, but I'll just say I just walked upstairs to Prabhupada's apartment. And as soon as I walked in, he gave this wonderful smile. It was like smiling ear to ear. And it's nothing that I did intentionally, but somehow by circumstances, my wild man of Borneo, you know, Allen Ginsberg, big beard and long, long hair, that was all cut off my face and my head. It was beyond my control. Somehow Krishna made an arrangement. So Prabhupada was smiling and looking at me. As soon as I walked in, he said, "Now you look very nice." Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna.
Something else?
When Arjuna was bewildered and giving many logical and cultural explanations why we shouldn't fight the war and out of family and affection, it seemed like Krishna was smiling, almost like a person, like looking like someone who's dreaming about a tiger or something. There's no tiger there. And so normally if you're in a distressed condition and the Lord is smiling like that, are we going to appreciate his smile, or is it a sarcastic smile, or what kind of smile is that?
Yeah, actually, the prahasanibha. It's interesting, this phrase comes up in our books. How does Prabhupada... He says, seemingly smiling or something like that. He uses this word, like, because eva means like, so like a smile. So in Bhagavad Gita, prahasan. So this is after when Arjuna, the beginning of the second chapter, Krishna begins his instruction. So it says there, Sanjaya says that Krishna was apparently smiling. Oh, that's the way, apparently smiling. So the acharyas give a commentaries about the different analysis of their idea of why Krishna is smiling. So here's what this is. Let me see if I can find it here. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Here it says. He smiled at Arjuna as a friend, suggesting, "How has such thinking come upon such a person as you? I will make you sink in the ocean of embarrassment for having said such unsuitable words." He made a very slight smile appear on his lower lip because it would be improper to laugh at Arjuna, who had now become his disciple. This is indicated by the phrase prahasaniva. Now, Prabhupada gives a different view on it. He says he's smiling because his friend has become his devotee. That's the problem. That's the way he characterizes it. So, of course, Krishna can accomplish different things and send different messages to different people in different ways. So there are lots of examples, just like here, smiling, also in the Kapiladeva, where he's explaining how the yogi should meditate on the form of the Lord. So it begins with his feet and different parts of his body. Beautiful description, actually, of meditation on Lord Vishnu. So that also, it's mentioned there, his smile. The yogi should meditate on his smile. And there's another verse where actually says that he should meditate on the laughter of the Lord. Well, you know, in the book, the Rasamrita Sindhu, there's whole analysis of different levels of smiling, right? How big your smile is and whether your lips part or your teeth are showing. And laughter, all the different kinds of laughter. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu analyzes everything minutely like that. So the devotee and Krishna can transmit different feelings in different ways through their smiles, miles of smiles.
One thing he was doing, I mean, Arjuna was setting Krishna up to speak the Bhagavad Gita with all that. I mean, that's a happy thought.
Yeah, so that's a nice insight also. Krishna's happy that Arjuna's, because actually Arjuna's playing a role, we know that. He voluntarily went into Maya and said, so Krishna's happy, now he gets to speak what he wants to, he wants to deliver this message.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for such a sweet class. You said Mother Sachi asked Gadadhar Pandit to be with Nidhar, Lord Chaitanya the whole time. But you don't see that so much in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You see he was always with Swarup Damodar or...
yeah. Dan. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, there are discussions of that. Swarup Damodar, because, you know, they're all... He's Radharani, Gadadhar is Radharani, so he's helping Lord Chaitanya experience what it's like to be Radharani. So he's doing it in a certain way. And then Lalita and Vishakha, as... Actually, there are different, the acharyas get different explanations of who the personalities are, but generally, Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar, they spend most of the, more time with him than anybody else. But Lord Chaitanya, what's interesting is that Lord Chaitanya did spend time with Gadadhar Pandit in Puri. Well, first thing is, not everyone from Bengal went to, when Lord Chaitanya went to Puri, not everyone went with him, but Gadadhar Pandit did. He stayed there. And Lord Chaitanya gave him that place, Sir Toto Gopinath. But Lord Chaitanya would go there regularly and read Srimad Bhagavatam. So his, you might say that Gadadhar Pandit was training Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Srimati Radharani by studying Bhagavatam with Lord Chaitanya. This is how we, this, you know, even, you know, for ourselves, this is a lesson. If we want to imbibe the mood of Srimati Radharani, this is what we're reading about, what we're speaking about today, mood of selfless service, that's what the Bhagavatam is all about. It may seem to be about a lot of different things, but ultimately that's what it's about, selfless service to Krishna. So Gadadhar Pandit, he met with Lord Chaitanya regularly, and they discussed Srimad Bhagavatam together, they read it. It says that his copy of the Bhagavatam was stained in different, stained, use the word, by the tears of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, Krishna asked Kaviraj Goswami, he had his different, he had his inspiration. The other thing is, of course, Krishna asked Kaviraj Goswami was working from the notes of Swarup Damodar, for one thing. So, he heard from Raghunath Das Goswami, who was very closely associated with Swarup Damodar. So you might say he heard about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Well, he did. He heard about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes from, you know, Swarup Damodar through Raghunath Das Goswami. So Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, that's the vision that he's getting. So, you know, maybe there's not so much mention of Gadadhar Pandit. That's part of the reason, because Swarup Damodar is the one who's telling the story, you might say.
I have one second part to the question is, I'm at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm reading now. You don't get so much of the smiling face of Krishna, you just hear the separation. And I keep thinking of this Lord Chaitanya not smiling, because the separation is always hankering for the association of Krishna. And you think he's, you know, running here and there, where's Krishna? And I don't think he's smiling. I'm thinking he's feeling this mood of separation so strongly that he's not smiling.
Of course, the separation is to enhance the meeting. What is the separation about? It's hankering for the meeting. So the two really go together. The thing about the separation is that it makes it very intense. Sometimes I think, there's another thing I think about, you know, non-devotees. If you read about Srimati Radharani, you might think, boy, it's like, you know, to use the vernacular, it's like, come on, girl, get it together. You know? It's like, you think, how could that somebody live like that? The way Radharani is so much on edge, you might say, all the time. Or at least sometimes we get that picture. where she's always so disturbed, she can't see Krishna. It's just, she's always lamenting and so on. And but somehow this is the highest ecstasy. It's another quaint, you know, the material world is upside down of the spiritual world. So there, in some ways, we can't really relate to it. I can see how, you know, some people will think. I remember years ago, actually, there was a young devotee I was giving class, and she said, what if you're not attracted to living in a place where you have to milk cows and, you know, that's all you do the rest of eternity? So, you know, we have our ideas of, all I could say was, don't worry, you're going to be in ecstasy all the time. You know, we think, well, I don't want to go to heaven if I can't take my iPod with me. You know, well, how can I have fun there? And probably just to tell the story that, you know, drunkards can't go to heaven. And a man said, well, I don't want to go there because all my friends are drunkards. You know, what will I do there? So, you know, it's, in some ways, it's hard for us to conceive of these things. I mean, I do, but me myself, I react sometimes. I think, boy, this is so intense. How can you live like this all the time? You know? But it's ecstasy. Somehow it's ecstasy in the spiritual world. So these things are revealed, of course, as you advance in spiritual life. We can, you know, get some kind of understanding, but not really. We're not really in touch with it until our hearts are completely pure. Yes, Maharaj.
I just wanted to maybe state the obvious, but when you were just mentioning, it seems so bewildering how people live like that, but my limited realization is it's all about love. Love makes everything copacetic, you might say.
Yeah.
Makes everything not only doable, but very desirable. Love makes everything sweet and wonderful and overrides all the external inconveniences that we hear about.
Mm.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.